The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
But the part of the story here is the shift to the right, no matter where you look. I'm showing you the deepest of blue states here for a second. California, look at what happened. It moved 12 points from 2020 to 2024. Illinois, it moved 9 points. Again, in the same four-year time period. Let's go over to New York, New Jersey. New York, it moved 11 points. New Jersey, it moved 11 points. So what we've seen in parts all across this country, the deepest of blue states, shifts to the right. Still blue, but shift to the right. All right, I want to take you to a couple other states that we hadn't really talked about. But look at what's going on in Florida and in Ohio. Remember 20 years ago, several races ago, you had to win Ohio. You had to win Florida, 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 right? Okay, Ohio. It was Republican plus 8 in 2020, plus 11 now, double digits. Florida, would you look at that? Plus 3 in 2020, plus 13 in 2024. Ohio and Florida, deep red states.
Holy Toledo. All right. Trump gained ground in 49 states and the District of Columbia compared to 2020. I went back through the record books. When was the last time a party gained in so many different places? You have to go all the way back to 1992 when Bill Clinton improved upon Michael Dukakis's performance in 49 states plus the District of Columbia. The bottom line is no matter where you looked on the map, Kate Baldwin, no matter where you looked, Donald Trump was improving on where he did 4 years ago, except for Washington State. It is no wonder that at this particular point, he looks like he's going to be the first Republican to win the popular vote since George W. Bush back in 2004. These are the types of groups that you would never have thought that Donald Trump would have gained so much support among 8 years ago when he first won against Hillary Clinton. Trump's was the best GOP showing among 18 to 29-year-olds in 20 years. You have to go all the way back to 2004. How about among black voters? It was the best performance for a Republican candidate for president in 48 years since Gerald Ford back in 1976. And among Hispanic voters, the exit polls only go back since 1972. But Donald Trump's performance on Tuesday was the best for a Republican presidential candidate in exit poll history. He literally goes all the way back through history and breaks history. This is what we're talking about, Kate Baldwin. Groups that you never thought that Donald Trump would do well amongst, even for a Republican candidate, that is what he did. If the 2016 election was about Donald Trump breaking through with white working class voters, this election was about breaking through and going to that Democratic coalition and tearing it apart. That, if let's just say he wins, the House GOP wins by more than 2.6 points, it'll be the best House GOP showing in a presidential year in the House popular vote since 1928. If there's any viewer out there who is that old, God bless you. But the bottom line is, it was probably the best House GOP national vote showing during most of our viewers' lifetimes.
No wonder Donald Trump was so confident going in. He caught a lot of flack for that from Joe and company. I don't understand why he's so confident. The Trump campaign is so confident. This race is neck and neck. Well, now they've had a few days to crunch all of the numbers, and we're learning with each passing day that the victory on Tuesday was even more overwhelming and historical than we realized at the time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last show of the week, a week that seems like has had three or four Fridays. There's so much going on. It'll be nice to catch our breath over the weekend, but there's lots to get to on today's show. As you just saw, oh, an overwhelming victory. It's incredible. And so many, as I've been saying, so many storylines, not even just that God said he would bring back the Jeroboam king in these last days, but he's silenced Antiochus. He's silenced the dear leader. He's crushed the Democrat Party. He's crushed the communist attempt to take over the United States from within. And as I said yesterday, I mean, you look around and you see a country that's relatively calm and quiet. Where are the... Remember 2016 and 17? From the day Donald Trump shocked the world all the way up through to the inauguration. I mean, there's memes to this day of these people who were screaming. Their heads were exploding. They were taking to the streets in D.C. the day of the inauguration. We'll see what happens, I guess, on January 20th next year. But still, one of our colleagues is in New York at the moment. He emailed us yesterday saying, I can't believe he went and visited Trump Tower and was walking the streets of Manhattan. And he said, I can't believe it's so calm. There's people are just carrying on with their lives. And meanwhile, the talking heads are telling us just how momentous this victory really and truly was. And look at the position it puts Donald Trump in, quite unlike the one he would have been in 4 years ago when they stole it from him. And he still would have been fighting against the FBI and the DOJ and the deep state and Rhino Republicans and Congress and Democrat-led Congress. All of that's gone. All of that's gone. How many rhinos that might still be in Congress are converting over to Trumpism even as we speak? I mean, these people have a lot of self-interest in mind as well as maybe hatred for Trump. But they all said this can't happen. What's Paul Ryan thinking? What's the previous head of the Republican Party? Well, Trump put new leadership in there. And they fought for him harder. They fought against fraud leading up to this past Tuesday. And it works. It works to fight against a communist takeover. You can't just surrender or try to compromise, maybe is how they reason it in their heads. You have to fight. You have to crush it. And that's exactly what we saw on Tuesday. And this was of God. God, we were discussing this morning just how momentous, speaking of momentous events, July 13th. You know, on July 13th, of course, they tried to assassinate Donald Trump, but that was the day Elon Musk said publicly, I'm on board the Trump train. Yeah, and then a few days later, Zuckerberg says, you know what he did there? Donald Trump was certainly courageous. You can't deny that. And then you have more in the black community coming forward saying they're trying to kill him. I don't really care for him much, but this is unjust. And then you heard there in the cold open just how he's the coalition under Trump. It includes a third of the black community. That's unheard of in our lifetimes. I mean, those of us who are old enough to remember know that you just, as a Republican, you went into a presidential contest thinking, I'll do pretty good if I get 9 or 10%. And then now he's got the Hispanic working class as well. All of these Democrats that have converted over. Elon Musk, on the night of the assassination attempt, as I was telling my staff earlier today, that on that day, God decided he wanted it not to just be a victory. He wanted it to be a red wave. He wanted it to be overwhelming. And that's what it was. And as I say, now you look at the position. Yesterday I went through that Axios piece about how Donald Trump, he's vanquished the Bushes, he's vanquished the Cheneys, he's vanquished the Bidens, certainly Kamala Harris. He's vanquished the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. He's gone quiet this week. A lot of them have. Some of them, I mean, there's still plenty of Trump derangement out there. But some of them, even on the Democrat side, they're beginning to change their tune. Why? Trump is stronger than ever, I read this yesterday, backed by a party wholly remade in his image and opposed by demoralized and defeated Democrats. That was in Axios yesterday. And then today, you've got another Axios piece about deep Democratic depression. Depression. Democrats didn't just lose badly. They lost to a convicted felon they ridiculed as a racist, misogynistic fascist, and an existential threat to democracy. a threat to democracy. That's what Joe Biden's been saying, or at least what he was saying in the lead up to them throwing him under the bus. Look at how pleasant and happy and even perky. He sounded more articulate than I've seen him speak in a number of months. And then right at the end of his speech yesterday, where he's talking about a smooth transition and inviting Trump to the White House, he's joking around with the press. It's really amazing what God has done, what has changed in just a few months' time. Here's the fake president yesterday, looking, as I say, unusually perky and happy. Clip one.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Please. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's good to see you all. And we're in a democracy. The will of the people always prevails. Yesterday, I spoke with President-elect Trump to congratulate him on his victory. And I assured him that I'd direct my entire administration to work with his team to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition. Something that I hope we can do, no matter who you voted for, is see each other not as adversaries, but as fellow Americans. Bring down the temperature. The American experiment endures. We're going to be okay.
So much bad blood between his family and the Obamas now. Obama, of course, he's always thought that Joe, you know, leave it to Joe to mess everything up. And then Obama throws him under the bus. And he comes out yesterday looking happier. Again, if you're in Trump's shoes, you don't trust a word that these people put out there. Because Obama, for his part, he talked about a smooth and easy transition in 2016, even as he was plotting to overthrow Donald Trump's government, plotting to use the deep state that he had thoroughly weaponized to just terrorize the Trump campaign and the Trump administration, to persecute them. No wonder, this is from the Washington Times, no wonder they're sweating a little bit over at the FBI. And Chris Wray, I mean, Trump appointed him. Now he's probably going to be gone before Trump returns. Why? Why? I mean, you're a good Republican, right? And you've just been upholding the law in the FBI, haven't you? And you used to work for Donald Trump. So what's the problem? They know. They know they've been exposed. It's just like Donald Trump said. They got caught. They got caught for the spying. They got caught for the lying, the FISA warrants and all those things. And really and truly, they got caught for the cheating. Caught for the cheat. Where were all of the segments like you saw in the cold open there after Donald Trump, or rather the fake president, somehow, some way, pulled in 81.2 million votes? You know, for all the praise that Donald Trump is getting right now, even from the radical left, the regime media, he's still trailing his vote total from 2020, 4 years ago. He still hasn't eclipsed what he got last time. And yet here come the talking heads. This is historic. I mean, the number of minorities, the Latinos, the blacks, the working class, the Democrats, the moderates, all of them. Where were those profiles for Joe Biden? Because if you just look at the numbers, even compared to this year, Joe Biden supposedly outperformed Trump by 7 million votes or so. So how do you explain this? Is Kamala Harris really that bad of a candidate? Or is Joe Biden really that good of a candidate? The truth is they're both bad and they both lost. They just couldn't get away with the cheating this time, could they? Donald Trump's margins for victory in the swing states, he won all of them. He ran the table, all seven states. Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And he won by greater margins than the fake president did 4 years ago. He won Arizona by 10,000 votes. Georgia was, what, 13,000? How do you explain it? That he somehow got 81.2 million votes and just had these razor-thin margins in the only states that he needed, the only states that he needed to win in the Electoral College. How about that? Look at how much Democrats can accomplish politically as long as they can cheat, steal, lie, disobey. If they can go forward lawlessly, well, they can maintain their grip on power. But if they're held to account, if the same law that applies to the Jan 6 protesters applies to Antifa and all the rest, well, you're going to see things a little bit differently out on the streets of America, even in Washington, D.C. What do we have, 72, 73 days coming? I mentioned to Sam this morning, you just think of biblical examples like with King David, as he was getting older, there started to be a lot of infighting and division and strife in the kingdom. Some of David's own sons carrying out insurrections, declaring themselves to be kings, fraudulently, fake kings. And then God, through David, installs Solomon. He's on the throne. This was of God. And everything calmed down just like that. It shows you what happens when the righteous are in authority. Or in this case, at least a conservative, a patriot, someone who loves his country, someone who sees that there's a lot that needs to be fixed. When the righteous are in charge, the people rejoice. That's what the proverb says. Look at, I'm sitting there watching Morning Joe this morning. Again, just the first 15, 20 minutes. And I'm like, what has happened here? They're no longer in the clutch of our adversary, the devil. It's like their brains suddenly are normal and they're able to reason a little bit. They're processing some of the numbers. They're trying to learn from the mistakes. And they're actually, in some cases, they're actually praising Donald Trump and his policies. Listen to this montage. I forget the number, but the guys put it together right before.
Meanwhile, the stock market continues to see record highs since the election of Donald Trump. All three major indexes up yesterday. Dow Jones climbing more than 1,500 points. Futures continue to rise this morning. So, Andrew, it looks like the markets continue to like the election of Donald Trump.
President-elect Trump successfully harnessed the anger and frustration felt by millions of Americans and used it to score a decisive election victory. This is a new analysis by the New York Times. Finding how Trump won came down to one essential bet, that his grievances could meld with those of the MAGA movement, and then with the Republican Party, and then with more than half the country. His mugshot became a best-selling shirt. His criminal conviction inspired $100 million in donations in one day. The images of him bleeding after a failed assassination attempt became the symbol of what supporters saw as a campaign of destiny.
I think many ordinary people, many Americans of all walks of life, when it wasn't necessarily rage, it was just they thought, actually, he says a whole bunch of things that I don't believe. The first term was pretty good. And on important things that matter to me, he actually is talking, they think, sense. On immigration, it is true that this government has failed to deal with the border until very recently. It's a real problem. He got it. He got the sense of that many people feel that the kind of culture wars and the left, the progressive slant of the Democratic Party is out of sync with Americans on gender, on trans issues, on all of that kind of stuff. And those were the ads that really went. And I think he taps into a sense which is not more, it's not so much just a feeling of rage. It's a sense that people, Americans across the board, think that he is closer to them than Democrats are. He may not be as bad, for example, for Ukraine as many people think. And I was very struck in our reporting this week My colleague based in Kiev wrote an excellent piece that suggests senior people in Kiev were rather hoping for a Trump victory. There are some good things that could come of this. I know it's hard to, it's hard for you to think about that right now, but there are areas that could be deregulation. I think there is a huge amount that he could do, good things that he could do. There are good things that could be done in foreign policy.
It's been decades since Democrats speak to this country as one nation, as one American people. You know, it's always, we're going to do this for the Hispanics, and we're going to do this for the African Americans, and we're going to do this with the LGBTQ community. And Donald Trump, you know, for all his flaws, and of course, a lot of his speech is objectionable, but he speaks to all Americans with the same message. And I think, you know, that's a big explanation here. I mean, people are looking for all these policy explanations. Well, which policies does Trump support that people like? It's really more about culture. It's really more about the way he addresses the country in an odd way. I think it's unifying, whereas Democrats have really kind of fractionalized the country and tried to win all these different coalitions. I think that's over.
Third day in a row that morning meltdown didn't melt down. How long is this going to continue? A few more days? A few more weeks? I mean, could this possibly continue through to the inauguration? This is unbelievable what you're seeing right here. Among the many storylines we've been discussing this week, you're watching things on MSNBC. Don't get me wrong, there's still plenty of mental derangement there. There's still plenty of commentators at night on this network that believe that democracy now is threatened. But look, this sets the tone for the day. Where's Hitler? What happened to Hitler? Now you've got people on there saying, I think he might actually do some good things for the country. And then, you know, there were high profile people in Kiev or Kiev, however you pronounce it, that were hoping for Trump to win. Didn't hear that before the election. No, this was, I mean, Ukraine was going to blow up. Putin was going to be an ascendant power. Then Trump gets in there and all of a sudden these people, they start changing their tune, as just like when David died and Solomon was installed as king, when God anointed him, then things did calm down in a hurry. I'm not suggesting that I know exactly how long that this will last. There's still a lot of hatred toward Donald Trump, but the Democrat Party is reeling. And there's quite a few people in the deep state who are reeling at the moment. And for the longest time, the regime media has just simply been the mouthpiece for the deep state. And now you see a change, a pretty dramatic change, even in the tone of the reporting going on within the regime media. I told you yesterday about the dramatic change that we've seen in Fox News just in the last year and a half. 18 months ago, they fired Tucker Carlson. They fired him. He was the most popular broadcaster on the network. Got to get rid of him. He's getting too pro-Trump. And then you look at how they campaigned, both sides. Monday morning, before the meltdown stopped melting down, Monday morning, Joe comes in confidently. Trump's got no ground game. Nobody's knocking on doors in Pennsylvania. You've got Democrats supporting Harris. They're all over the place. We've got this at the grassroots level. Trump, he's just popping off. He's all over the place. He's exhausted. He's losing it mentally. That was Monday morning, Joe. Monday morning. Now listen to the Monday morning quarterback, Van Jones, as he reflects on the two campaigns. Clip 9.
We got beat because the Republicans and the conservatives built a different media system that had to do with online, had to do with podcasts, had to do with streaming platforms, and they were spending their money there. We were laughing at them. and knocking on doors in Philadelphia and Detroit. It's like, there's no Trump people. They're not dropping literature. They're not knocking on doors.
It was laughing like, oh, Elon Musk and Charlie Kirk, yeah. Their PACs don't know what they're doing.
We were making fun of Donald Trump for having thrown away his ground game and doing some weird stuff online. We thought that they were idiots. It turned out we were the idiots. We woke up in a body bag because while we were knocking on doors, they were making these phones into 24-hour-a-day political weapons for themselves. And so we got outflanked, outplayed, outbeat by people who told us the whole time that they knew what they were doing.
Trump said to 60 Minutes, no, no thanks. You guys are liars. You're deceitful. And then he goes on with Theo Vaughn and Joe Rogan and even other podcasters I had never heard of. He says it was his son, Barron, suggesting, hey, Dad, you should... His son's 19? Hey, Dad, this is a popular podcast with the young people. You should go on that. And he did. And he was hilarious. He was informative. He was comfortable. He would talk for hours with Joe Rogan. He spoke for 3 hours. And meanwhile, the big networks, you know, the ones in the fancy suits with all the makeup and the many different camera angles... Trump just said, no, thank you. I mean, he called into Fox and that sort of thing from time to time. But here it was. How much do you suppose Barack Obama, who prided himself, his campaign in 2008 and 2012, hey, we know how to use social media. We're right on the cutting edge of technology. We just blew away McCain and Romney. And now here, who are the idiots now? It shows you just how dramatic the shift has been with respect to the regime media, and then the way people consume media. I mean, ordinary Americans, where they go to get their news. Turns out millions and millions of them sit down and, I guess, invest hours of their day just listening to a conversation between Joe Rogan and Donald Trump. Listen to Axios' take. This is clip 10.
I think all of us have to come to grips with legacy media is just not as important as it thinks it is. It is to you, it is to me. That's a relatively small group of people who rely on us for their information. And you have to go into the world as it is, not as you wish it to be. And basically, the way people get information is shattered into 20, 30 different pieces. And so if you just look empirically at the numbers... Joe Rogan's more important than any of us. He just has a much bigger, hyper-connected audience that listens to his every word.
That's, here again, you heard that right. You heard it right from Van Jones. We're the idiots. Here you have MSNBC saying Joe Rogan is more important than any of us. Listen to Nicole Wallace, her reaction, clip 11.
As a human, I deleted Twitter today as an act of self-preservation and because I was no longer able to find the things I was interested in.
As a human. Thank you. Thank you, Nicole. Here's a good rhino Republican. Used to work in Republican administrations. She's deleted Twitter because she just can't find the information that she's seeking. Translation? She prefers to live in the tiniest of tiny echo chambers. She can't get to the information she wants on Twitter? Seriously? You can get anything you want on Twitter. That's the way Elon Musk likes it. Speaking of people who are much more important and influential than these talking heads now in the regime media, Elon Musk. He would be right there as well. Sits down with Joe Rogan the night before the election. Monday night, Joe Rogan comes out with his endorsement of Donald Trump. Everything went just perfect for Trump's campaign. And the talking heads are even acknowledging that this is historic. Just coming back to Joe Rogan for a moment. Listen to him as he talks about just how broad or big the Trump MAGA tent really and truly is. Clip 3.
Donald Trump's entire career is, you're fired.
Yep.
You're a loser. Rosie O'Donnell's a loser. Like, that's his whole shtick. And you expect him to course correct once he gets into office? No, he's not. That's not who he is. You elected that guy. But along with that, now you get RFK Jr., you get Tulsi Gabbard, you get Elon Musk, and you get J.D. Vance. You get brilliant people who aren't ideologically captured, two of them who used to be Democrats, one of them that probably knows more about environmental polluting yep. and about the problems with pharmaceutical drug companies and health and the consequences of all sorts of pesticides and herbicides, ingredients in your food that should be banned and are banned in another country. You got that guy in there now.
Yep.
And we got a real chance to make real change. This is like one of the first times ever where there's a real chance to make real tangible change that's going to be for the good of everybody.
A chance to make change that helps everyone. Trump this time around, surrounded by people, very smart and capable people, people that are loyal to him and to his cause as well. They and he's not alone, Rogan, talking about this is a critical, a defining moment to actually make change for the better. Steve Bannon touched on this point earlier today as well. Listen to clip two.
Because you're not going to have another Trump. It's not going to happen. In this country, it's come along through divine providence, a General Washington, a President Lincoln, a President Trump, a Reagan, an FDR, next an Andrew Jackson. It doesn't happen that often. And once it happens, it's decades and decades and decades and decades before it happens again. What has happened is providential. And now it's time for a gut check. Are we prepared to meet the moment? Are we prepared to leave it all on the field and leave it all on the field now?
Right before that bit, he said that, you know, 2 years from now, Hakeem Jeffries could be the Speaker of the House. The Democrats may win back the House. And he says as soon as that happens, they begin impeachment proceedings immediately. So his point, besides the fact that this is providential, that there's never going to be another Donald Trump. Now, think about what we've been saying in America Under Attack and all through our literature. It's prophesied. God said he would come back. I gave you the quotes from my father earlier this week. And God has now brought him back. And even the fact that Bannon's really emphasizing the two-year window that the Trump administration has with a majority in the House, with a majority in the Senate, with a majority on the Supreme Court. Now is the time to carry out dramatic changes. Rogan touched on this as well. They've got the mandate. Listen to the guy that was with Rogan. I'm not sure who he is, but he talks about the mandate that the Trump administration has this time around. Clip four.
And then there's even more guys. Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yes, Vivek.
David Sachs. I mean, he's got some really smart guys.
Vivek
who are very successful.
Yes.
Who are really, Vivek's incredible.
Incredible.
Just excellent and yeah. totally brilliant and so right about so many of the major issues.
Yes.
And look, I mean, Donald Trump now, he has a real mandate, which is like, this is kind of what's crazy. This isn't 2016 where, you know, he lost by several million votes in the popular vote, but won the counties that were important and just by the skin of his teeth got in. But the mandate is like very specific. It's like the basic policies of like, okay, immigration control. Can't have an open border with no right. control of who comes into our country. A desire to get out of stupid foreign wars.
Yes.
You know, and obviously the improve the economy,
yes.
deal with inflation, things like that. But he's got a mandate to do that right now.
The war to recover. That's part of the 2 Kings 14 prophecy and even Amos 7 as well. Once you see Obama silenced, then I mean the kingdom really does expand and grow in its power and influence. But then if you get into even what Steve Bannon noted, you can see how that it's temporary. And it's also going to fool a lot of people into settling into a state of complacency As I've said so often, of course, what God's really interested in here is repentance and change spiritually. That kind of change. If you think about God bringing them back and going back to the miracles, certainly from July 13 on, it's just, it all illustrates just how much mercy and love God has for us and how much he's extending us another, yet another opportunity to turn to him as our king, to turn to him as our ruler, as our leader, as our shepherd, our guide. Most people don't want that in their lives. There will be a time, though, during this kingship, so to speak, this Jeroboam reign, where there will be a recovery, a resurgence. But again, don't be lulled into a false sense of security because of that. There's other Antiochus. There's other Antiochuses, ones to come out of the heart of Europe, that the devil's going to be working through to try to blot out the name of Israel. If the devil moves from one Antiochus to the next one, we got to be ready for it. Because the devil's not going away. Even though Obama's been silenced, the devil's going to be doing everything he can to destroy the people of Israel, to destroy those lost tribes that settled into Britain and the United States and Northwestern Europe. I know most people don't know about that identity. They should get into the United States and Britain in prophecy. They should study it for themselves. It's not that difficult to prove, but it does take some diligent study. Request your free copy. The United States and Britain in prophecy. It's important that we understand and know where this is leading. It's like I told you earlier this week with respect to the election steal 4 years ago. My father came out there and said, you know, the story doesn't end with the election and a lot of other things being stolen from Donald Trump. Well, I submit to you that the story doesn't end with the return of Jeroboam either. So now what? For the next 2 and 4, 6, 10 years, what's next? You can know. You get a beautiful big picture perspective in this book right here. The United States and Britain in prophecy. This Axios piece, it talks about how that the Democrats feel like that they're lost. They're a lost party. It says the traditional media structure, sympathetic to their views and hostile to Trump's, was shattered. This is Axios in many ways. A mouthpiece for the Democrat Party. The traditional media structure, sympathetic to their views and hostile to Trump's, was shattered. And now we're seeing, at least for a time, a different MSNBC. It's like I told the staff this morning. I mean, once you go so far in, you're so deep into the obsession, the derangement, that you're literally comparing Trump to Hitler. And then it turns out that Hitler wins in a Democratic landslide. You're going to see some people backpedaling a bit, even on the side of the regime. I mean, where else do you go from Hitler is Trump? I mean, how much worse can it be? That whole apparatus, that complex, that media complex, I'm just giving you what Axios says, it's been shattered. It says here, but the road to the Democrats' Damascus requires deep, honest self-reflection, and many party insiders tell us entirely new leadership. The Democrat Party, if you think of it, is now looking for new leadership. I mean, that's another way of saying Obama's been silenced. For going on 20 years, the media have been swooning before the dear leader, even when he installed the fake president. I mean, we could go back and play the montage. How many times? It must have been 8, 10, 12 times that high-profile spokespeople for Joe Biden's administration accidentally said President Obama. They accidentally said the quiet part out loud. President Obama said, I mean President Biden. You can't make this up. This is what we've been living through. 20 years. 20 years of swooning. And my father in this issue, he says, look, and this was months ago. God is silencing Obama. And we're seeing that. That's being fulfilled. We're seeing it happen. Listen, it says in Axios, the party's two most popular figures, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, are happy to help in the waning moments of elections, but aren't going to lead a revival. Well, there you go. The dear leader this time, he's not going to be able to lead a revival. We've already seen how they don't swoon before him. He lectures the young black men, remember, and he gets rebuked for it by his own party. He goes around with his stern look, campaigning for Kamala, putting down Trump. It just doesn't fly like it used to. I mean, even going back to the days, the drop the mic moments at the press correspondence dinner, or what he said on the funny show about how, well, at least I'm president, you're never going to be president. How the tables have turned. There's another one here from Spiked Online talking about the party elite, the Democrat elites, that they've driven the party right over a cliff. Ever since the rise of Barack Obama, Democrats have seen themselves as destined to rule. That's the way Obama saw himself. He saw himself as a king, a dictator. He's shocked when Trump arrives in 2016. He unleashes the deep state on Trump in every way imaginable. I mean, it was hamstringed Donald Trump for 4 years. It's a wonder that he got anything done. No help from Congress. They were just busy impeaching him. Mueller was trying to dig up dirt on him and cover their tracks at the same time. And then the day after Tuesday, the DOJ announces, all those investigations into Trump, they've disappeared. Disappeared? What a different... the tone, whether it's coming out of the DOJ, the regime media, MSNBC, it's so very different. Speaking of the deep state, I don't think this was a video that came out since he was elected. We were trying to find the date on it. But this was, at the very least, it's something that Donald Trump came out with maybe a few weeks ago. How he plans to dismantle the deep state. It goes for 3+ minutes, but he gives you, it's a short speech with 10 points. And I told Sam, leave all 10 points in. I mean, this is, as you listen to this, think about how everyone would have reacted in 2016. I mean, he did campaign on the swamp and the deep state and all those things, but think about what would have happened had he come out with a video like this 8 years ago. This is clip 8.
Here's my plan to dismantle the deep state and reclaim our democracy from Washington corruption once and for all. And corruption it is. First, I will immediately reissue my 2020 executive order restoring the president's authority to remove rogue bureaucrats. And I will wield that power very aggressively. Second, we will clean out all of the corrupt actors in our national security and intelligence apparatus, and there are plenty of them. The departments and agencies that have been weaponized will be completely overhauled so that faceless bureaucrats will never again be able to target and persecute conservatives, Christians, or the left's political enemies, which they're doing now at a level that nobody can believe even possible. Third, we will totally reform FISA courts, which are so corrupt that the judges seemingly do not care when they are lied to in warrant applications. So many judges have seen so many applications that they know were wrong, or at least they must have known. They do nothing about it. They're lied to. Fourth, to expose the hoaxes and abuses of power that have been tearing our country apart, we will establish a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to declassify and publish all documents on deep state spying, censorship, and corruption. And there are plenty of them. Fifth, we will launch a major crackdown on government leakers who collude with the fake news to deliberately weave false narratives and to subvert our government and our democracy. When possible, we will press criminal charges. Sixth, we will make every inspector general's office independent and physically separated from the departments they oversee so they do not become the protectors of the deep state. Seventh, I will ask Congress to establish an independent auditing system to continually monitor our intelligence agencies to ensure they are not spying on our citizens or running disinformation campaigns against the American people, or that they are not spying on someone's campaign like they spied on my campaign. Eighth, we will continue the effort launched by the Trump administration to move parts of the sprawling federal bureaucracy to new locations outside the Washington swamp. Just as I moved the Bureau of Land Management to Colorado, as many as 100,000 government positions could be moved out, and I mean immediately, of Washington to places filled with patriots who love America, and they really do love America. Ninth, I will work to ban federal bureaucrats from taking jobs at the companies they deal with and that they regulate. So they deal with these companies and they regulate these companies, and then they want to take jobs from these companies. Doesn't work that way. Such a public display cannot go on, and it's taking place all the time, like with Big Pharma. Finally, I will push a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on members of Congress. This is how I will shatter the deep state and restore government that is controlled by the people and for the people.
I don't think that would have gone over very well 8 years ago, or even 4 years ago. But now, I mean, look at what they've done to this man. They tried to assassinate him. And he's got a mandate. And it was an overwhelming victory. And he's got support. Truth be told, he's got support from America. Support from ordinary Americans to do exactly what he says there. The Washington Times has a piece today. FBI brass stunned and shell-shocked over Trump re-election. Stunned and shell-shocked. Why should they be stunned? I mean, these aren't political institutions, are they? Why should they be shocked? Why are they afraid? Well, they've been weaponized. They're not apolitical at all. They're very political. They're biased. Look at the way they go after Jan 6 protesters. I heard an interview with one that was just let out of this maximum security prison in Beaumont because he went into the Capitol for 23 minutes. The guy's 32 years old. He's telling the host, as soon as I got in there, I was scared. And I was told you got to get with a group to save your life. There's fights, there's knives, there's all these things going on. And what did he do? He waltzed into the Capitol after someone on the inside just flung the door open. What did he do when he got inside? Took a few photos. Tried to stop a lady from breaking a window. And then he left. And he's in a high security prison. And the DOJ, when they arrested him, and of course it was 5 a.m, he's like, what? It was 10 months later. What are you arresting me for? I'm going to work. What do you know about January 6th? And then, of course, they tried to coerce him into giving information about some of his friends. This is your DOJ. This is the FBI. Chris Wray should be shocked, shell-shocked. It says the brass on the 7th floor at FBI headquarters in D.C. are walking around in a daze and wary of a house cleaning since President Trump won his re-election Tuesday. The Times learned through several anonymous bureau sources that senior executives who run the agency were stunned and shell-shocked. You know the fit test, how they let the standards slack on the fit test, the first FBI source said. Everyone's going to have a real problem when they're running for the door. It says FBI Director Chris Wray and Deputy Director Paul Abate have little chance of remaining at the Bureau by the time Mr. Trump is sworn into office. There you go. As I said, they should be shaking in their boots, certainly changing their tune. I thought this contrast says everything you need to know about so many of these career bureaucrats, members of the administrative state. This is Bill Barr. He, too, worked for Donald Trump. And there was a time when, I mean, he was pro-Trump, right? Then he stabs him in the back, tells you the election was perfect, the 2020 election. And then he becomes a Fox News contributor. And he goes on there routinely, regularly now, to slam Trump. This was during peak Lawfare, when Fox asked him, in particular, about the documents case, play clip five.
Well, it started out under the Presidential Records Act and the archives trying to retrieve documents that Trump had no right to have. But it quickly became clear that what the government was really worried about were these classified and very sensitive documents. I was shocked by the degree of sensitivity of these documents and how many there were, frankly. And so the government's agenda was to get those, protect those documents and get them out. And I think it was perfectly appropriate to do that. It was the right thing to do. And I think the counts under the Espionage Act that he willfully retained those documents are solid counts. Now, I do think we have to wait and see what the defense says and what proves to be true. But I do think that even half what Andy McCarthy said, which is if even half of it is true, then he's toast.
If even half of what McCarthy says, he's toast. I mean, this is a solid case. I looked into it. I was shocked at how classified, how secretive these documents are that he just took down to Mar-a-Lago. That's what he said in June of this year. Here's what he's saying now about not just the classified documents case, all the cases, clip six.
I don't think the president really is going to have any legal problems going forward. These cases are not going to go forward, neither the federal cases nor the state cases, against the president. So I think it's really a question of how these governments, the federal government, the Justice Department, is going to dismount from the limb it's gotten itself out on. And in these situations, there's no doubt in my mind that the best interests of the country are served by them dismissing the case. They're not going to be able to go forward with it while he's a sitting president, either the federal cases or the state cases, because we don't want these kinds of things distracting the chief executive from dealing with the people's business. And the cases are very weak cases.
The king returns to power and they start singing a different tune. Now you see the DOJ's, they're way out on a limb. And the cases, they're not solid. Now they're weak. 6 months ago, he says they're solid. 6 months ago, he says Trump is toast. And today, well, the DOJ needs to get out of this. Drop these cases. They're all weak. The Fed cases, the state cases, they're all weak. These people, so many of them, are weak. They're weak. And they've been exposed. They've been exposed, as I've said, all through this week. We've had some exciting broadcasts. Lots to try to get through. And as I see from the clock, again, it moves fast. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting. But the point that I've been making, so many prophetically significant storylines. If you don't have a copy of America Under Attack, I mean, that gives you the big picture from 2013 on to today. The big picture. I mentioned U.S. and Britain in prophecy earlier. Make sure you call our operators and order or request your free copies of those two books. Guess what? We're going to give you an extra 3 minutes or so of broadcasting because I want to squeeze in this week's World Watch segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us today. We thank you for joining us all week, even for a special show on Wednesday evening. And we'll look forward to more exciting and informative broadcasts next week. We'll finish off with World Watch.
Russia test-fired missiles from land, sea, and air on October 29th to simulate a massive nuclear strike against the West. Russian President Vladimir Putin said using nuclear weapons would be an extremely exceptional measure, but he has threatened to use them against the West if the U.S. or its allies allow Ukraine to fire long-range missiles into Russia. State news agencies said Russia's military test-fired a Yars nuclear-capable intercontinental ballistic missile. Russia's defense ministry said two nuclear-powered submarines in the Barents Sea and the Sea of Okhotsk also fired ballistic missiles that can be armed with nuclear warheads. Tu-95 strategic bombers capable of carrying nuclear weapons practiced long-range cruise missile attacks. Nuclear annihilation is humanity's number one problem today, and the threat is increasing. Russia and other nuclear powers' growing belligerence endangers the safety of the world. To learn more about this serious problem and its ultimate solution, read Nuclear Proliferation: Will Humanity Survive? Russia and Iran are working toward signing a comprehensive treaty to further strengthen the two countries' relations, The Times of Israel reported on October 31st. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the agreement is expected to be signed by the end of the year. He did not give any specifics on the defense ties, but he called the treaty a serious factor in strengthening Russian-Iranian relations and a strategic partnership. Deepening these ties poses definite threats to Israel and Ukraine. Russia has been ramping up efforts to increase cooperation with countries strongly opposed to the U.S. These talks come in the wake of mounting U.S. sanctions on Iran and Russia's deepening military ties with North Korea, a product of a similar comprehensive defense treaty the two nations signed in June. The Russia-Iran partnership is especially threatening to Europe. Iran has also proved to be one of Russia's principal backers in the war on Ukraine. With Russia's ongoing war against Ukraine, concerns over America's reliability as an ally, and Iran's actions in the Middle East, watch for Europe to take decisive action soon. To learn more, read our free booklet, The King of the South. China is boosting its space military capabilities at a mind-boggling pace, General Chance Saltzman, head of the U.S. Space Force, said on November 1st. The U.S. military relies heavily on its satellites, far more than any other nation. If any were destroyed in war, it could be catastrophic to the U.S. During a European tour, Saltzman said one of the main reasons President Donald Trump established Space Force in 2019 was because Russia and China developed and demonstrated the ability to conduct war fighting in space. China and Russia have tested both satellites and Earth-based weapons that can destroy other nations' satellites. Russia is developing a nuclear weapon designed for space. Bible prophecy indicates that a communication disruption could be a serious detriment to the U.S. in a coming World War III. To learn more, read The Satellite Slayers. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.